And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I have a question for you. What is it about a man who betrays us, a traitor, that makes us hate him more than evil itself? When I heard over the weekend that Ralph Nader was entering the presidential race, I couldn't help but think back to other great betrayals. There's, of course, the famous Julius Caesar play by William Shakespeare, where his longtime good friend Brutus is stabbing him in the back. He turns and says, "A tu, Brute." Or, of course, 230 years ago in our own history, few Americans remember the name of British generals Howe. They might remember Cornwallis as the general that lost at Yorktown, but there's no animosity there. That's just part of American history. But say the name Benedict Arnold, the consummate American traitor. Every school child knows his name. And if you look to the present day, sure, I dislike intensely George Bush's policies. I have condemned them frequently on this program. Do I hate the man? I don't know. Kind of hard to hate a trained monkey. Even when I look at the evil machinations of the two men that pulled George Bush's strings, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, they're certainly evil. But I have to admit, my intense feelings of dislike toward them pale compared to my loathing for Ralph Nader. But why? Why? Why do I feel so much more intently against a Ralph Nader than I do against a Dick Cheney or a Karl Rove? People who are actively destroying our Constitution, ruining our country, making dirty politics the norm. Why do I hate Ralph Nader more? Ralph Nader, as I'm sure you know, was using the word progressive decades before any of us did. There was a time in the 70s and the 80s when it came to car safety, and Ralph Nader was the consummate consumer advocate. He was the man that was out there helping individuals against big bad corporations. He was giving the John Edwards speech long before John Edwards was ever in public office. But recall that Benedict Arnold, too, once was a national hero. Benedict Arnold, too, was very important. Many historians believe that he would be the hero of the American Revolution, given his battles in upstate New York, were it not for his decision to betray his country. Sure, it was a complex decision. He didn't feel respected by George Washington. He didn't know how to play the political winds well. He definitely felt sorry for himself. And he was a bit of a megalomaniac. And I can see how those same words apply to Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader, of course, is one of the reasons why George Bush is our president. He's not the sole reason, to be sure. It required a corrupt Supreme Court. My anger for them is pretty fierce, too, because I have this crazy belief that courts should actually base decisions on the law and the Constitution rather than the people that they politically support. So I have to admit, my anger for the Supreme Court is probably also higher than Karl Rove or Dick Cheney. I see them as, well, just par for the course. We know they're evil. But what is it about someone whose evil is hidden that makes me, that makes us, hate them so? When I look at Ralph Nader and I recall that even if you took Florida out of the mix in 2000, if the 23,000 Nader votes in New Hampshire, if just 7,000 of them had voted their conscience and said to themselves, remember, these are Nader supporters. This is back before Nader became the obvious spoiler, I guess, that most of us knew he was then. Would they really prefer Bush be president? I remember Michael Moore, who had endorsed Ralph Nader, but backed off in those last weeks. A little too late, Michael. Because he reminded us of what Ralph Nader could do. Now, I'm ready for all the criticism. I know what you're going to say. We need more third parties in America. Every man has a right to run for president. Mark, you're talking against democracy. Let the man run. Well, that's all very nice, but it's not the way our system works. If you believe in third parties, if you believe in parliamentary democracy, if you believe in proportional voting, all of which I think are good things, there are ways to do something about that. One state in this country, not even the most progressive state, the state of Louisiana, has runoff voting. That's right. If you don't get a majority in Louisiana, you simply vote again, and then among the top two candidates, and then that runoff election decides the election. I happen to support such a system. I think it's silly that pluralities win election. If you look at the Republican race, you see John McCain winning primary after primary with 36% of the vote in very crowded fields. So if you want to support runoff elections, I'm all for it. And if you note that runoff elections increase the rise of third parties, you're absolutely right. If a third party, the Green Party, for example, were to get second place in a contest, and then they would run against the first place. And maybe if it were Republicans and the Greens, the Democrats would then support the Green candidate. I'm all for that. I will support any effort to implement that at the state level. I will support a constitutional amendment to bring it about nationwide. But that is not the system we have now, is it? That's just not the way the world works. And if you think that's the way the world works, well, you just don't know anything about American constitutional law. Now, do you have a right to vote for Ralph Nader? Of course you do. And you have a right to vote for George Bush, too, who's not even running. And yes, you have a right to vote for John McCain. But I have to tell you, and it's weird like this, and maybe it's irrational, and if you think it is irrational, call in and tell me why. But people who vote for Ralph Nader this year will bug me more than people who vote for John McCain. Look, I know what a Republican is. I see them. I debate them, right? I debate Mike Lane all the time. You'll hear my debate with Mike Lane tomorrow. If you actually believe in transferring money from the poor to the rich, if you actually don't want poor people to get health care, if you believe that we can send hundreds of thousands of troops all over the world to create democracy in our image, and to do so even when a country doesn't attack us, if you believe that inherited wealth should stay forever in one family, if you are against civil rights for most people, well, okay, you're a Republican. You know, you don't think a woman should have a right to choose an abortion. You believe that religion should be in government control. Fine, I disagree with you on all those issues. But you're a Republican. You at least are standing by your principles. And if you believe in all those things, go vote for McCain. And, you know, what can I say? All I can do is try to convince you your beliefs are wrong. But I can't convince you that your beliefs don't go in line with your candidate. If you believe in massive debt forever, and you believe that tax burdens should more be on the poor and middle class than the rich, vote for McCain. That's your guy. But if you believe in progressive politics, if you believe in universal health care, if you believe that all Americans deserve equal opportunity, the choice is clear. It's the Democratic nominee. It's probably going to be Barack Obama. But even if it's Hillary Clinton, if you vote for Ralph Nader, you're not just voting for John McCain. You're actually praising yourself as doing something good and then voting for John McCain. And that bugs me more. That bugs me more. If I see a New Hampshire voter in 2000 who voted for George Bush, I'll roll my eyes and say, you know, you really harmed the country. You know that. And hopefully they'd have the decency to hang their head in shame and say, yes, I did. But if I see a New Hampshire Nader voter in 2000, well, I'm not one that's inclined to do violence. But I'd have to restrain myself. At the very least, I'd probably end up screaming at the top of my lungs, you idiot! You idiot! This is someone who thought they were helping their country? It bugs me more. I don't know. Maybe you think I'm wrong. Maybe you think that, you know, after all, the idiots who vote Republican, right, they're doing more damage. I mean, at least the ones who voted for Ralph Nader are like the ones who don't vote at all. And, you know, I'm not happy with people who don't vote at all. I mean, they do the exact same thing as the ones who vote for Ralph Nader. So why don't you hear me decrying the people who don't vote? Well, I do decry the people that don't vote. I do get mad at them. I don't like them. I think they are deserting their country. But to walk into a voting booth and to pull the lever for Ralph Nader, knowing full well that you support progressive ideals and you could support a candidate that's far more progressive than John McCain, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, and then not to do it? I don't know why that bugs me more. To me, it's Benedict Arnold and Brutus all over again. As for Ralph Nader, I just think he's a megalomaniac. He could have run in the Democratic primaries. Dennis Kucinich ran in the Democratic primaries. In some ways, Ralph Nader's views are like his, although I have a lot more respect for Dennis Kucinich. He ran. You can argue about whether he got not enough media attention or whatever, but he ran, he tried, he lost. And he's going to support the Democratic nominee, I have no doubt. I respect Dennis Kucinich. But Ralph Nader? I hope, and again, call me out on it if you disagree, I hope Ralph Nader gets as little media attention as possible. I don't want him invited to the debates. I want him to be ignored. I want him to become the Harold Stassen of our day. You probably don't even know who Harold Stassen is, and that's a good thing. Harold Stassen was a man who was, I think he was a governor or a senator, I'm not even sure. He was someone high up in Republican politics. He ran for president. He lost in the primary. He ran as an independent. And then he ran again every 4 years for the next several decades until he's not remembered for what he was. Like I said, I don't even remember what he was. He's remembered as a big fat joke. Ralph Nader betrayed us. Ralph Nader used to believe in fighting corporations. Ralph Nader used to believe in looking out for the common man. But in a time when America is coming in great numbers to Barack Obama, to a person who speaks against the corporations, as does Hillary Clinton, by the way, someone who really is in a position to change things, and then you're going to go and you're going to throw away your vote? I guess the other thing that really bugs me about Ralph Nader is how much support he gets from Republicans. They're not stupid. When we come back, I want to tell you about all the money that Ralph Nader gets from the Republicans and suggest that maybe we Democrats need to do the same thing. Give some money to Mike Huckabee. Well, he probably won't run. Maybe James Dobson, Pat Robertson. Because what we Democrats have to understand that if a right-wing fanatic runs, that will help us. Just as Ralph Nader helps the Republicans. If you want to call in and comment on this or any other subject, we've got more to talk about than Ralph Nader. I'm almost through with him. Toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. And when we come back, I have a caller on the line, and we'll get right to her right after this.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A June 3rd hearing has been set in federal court to consider final approval of the Retiree Health Care Trust Fund negotiated by the United Auto Workers at General Motors. Doug Cunningham has this report.
The United Auto Workers has taken federal legal action needed to implement the VEBA Healthcare Trust for GM UAW retirees. The UAW says the trust fund will be managed by independent trustees with expertise in healthcare and investments. If approved by the U.S. District Court in Eastern Michigan, the proposed settlement filed by the UAW and retirees will establish the Health Trust Fund to pay for health care benefits for current and future UAW GM retirees. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger has reiterated his previous comment that the UAW is confident this VEBA Trust Fund will have enough money to pay for retiree health care for 80 years. Any modifications to union retiree benefits cannot be finalized at the bargaining table. Court approval is needed. 11 trustees will manage the VEBA, 5 appointed by the UAW, and 6 public trustees. GM will keep paying for retiree health benefits until January 1st of 2010, when the VEBA takes over.
After a contentious labor campaign, nurses at Parkview Community Hospital in Riverside, California, voted to join the United Nurses Association of California and Union of Healthcare Professionals. Leilani Albano has more on the story.
Parkview's 260 registered nurses were elated over news of their win after having endured ongoing intimidation and harassment in the months leading up to the elections, says ER nurse Don Griffin.
Oh, I think it's great. It's very, I think it's a big step forward for Parkview.
While UNEC officials didn't say how many voted in support of labor representation in the elections that took place earlier this month, they say a majority of the nurses supported the union drive. Laureen Lazarevich is spokeswoman for UNAC.
They're very excited that they were able to choose courage over fear and overcome many obstacles, and they're very excited about going into contract negotiations.
With union elections behind them, nurses will now enter contract negotiations, where they will have to sort out the most basic needs of the hospital. For Workers Independent News, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
Here is today's economic report. Is your mortgage higher than the worth of your home? According to a new study by Moody's, nearly 8.8 million homeowners hold mortgages that have outpaced the value of their homes. That's roughly 10% of all U.S. homeowners. The result is a large selling off of homes at a time when the market is already glutted with empty housing. As a result, any recovery hoped for by economists in the housing market could be prolonged.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm talking about Ralph Nader. I don't know why. I guess just to show my outrage, and then I'll ignore him for the rest of the campaign. I am outraged that this man, who was once a liberal, once a progressive, seems determined now to elect John McCain. And what can I say? I loathe the man. I know I have Ann on the line. Ann, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark.
How are you? What are your thoughts on this topic?
Okay, well, first of all, you know, and I'll tell your audience, I am representing RedZonePolitics.com, which is my website, and we are friendly with Radio's Inside Scoop. It's astounding. It just makes you completely lose your power of logic to think about why Ralph Nader would choose to do this. And I have a little story. I have my own little Ralph Nader story.
Okay.
I recently went to a Green Party-sponsored event at Bus Boys and Poets in Washington, D.C., where Ralph was slated to show up as sort of their star power, if you will. And I decided to go to cover it for my website because I've been shooting videos of a lot of football fans at Obama rallies because I want to know what the appeal is for regular average guys about Obama. Anyway, I decided I'll go do a little trip to the left and go cover this Nader event. So I get to the Nader event, and it's a Green Party event. Pretty much from what I could tell, it looked a little bit frumpy, okay? Just the general.
What do you mean by frumpy?
I don't know. It was just sort of like the blue jeans and old t-shirts thing. It wasn't about, there was no professional media there whatsoever. So clearly, it wasn't really being taken that seriously, you know, beyond this sort of fringe element. And I showed up because, you know, I sort of have a fondness for the granola and Birkenstocks crowd. I used to be one of them.
Okay.
Before I smartened up a bit. Anyway, so I was there and I decided to cover it. And what was, there were two things that were interesting. The first one was that, of course, nobody really was going to ask Ralph about his motives for it. He was at the time only thinking about running. He wasn't, hadn't actually decided.
When was this, Ann?
This was beginning of February, end of January. I don't have the exact date.
Oh, okay, so it was just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was really recently.
All right, okay.
And so there were two things that were interesting. The first was that I decided to ask him, you know, given what happened in Florida in 2000 and the 97,000 votes that he took away from arguably probably for the most part Al Gore, and the fact
right.
that, you know, progressive America has paid the price ever since, why would he think about running now? And what was really interesting is that the sort of groovy granola crowd went from groovy to hostile instantly towards me.
I'm sure they did.
So the
they don't want to face the truth.
Well, yeah, but the whole idea of dissent and questioning authority was not going to work for them if it was questioning their demigod, you know, Ralph. And Ralph
right.
won't even join the Green Party, okay? This is how highly he thinks of them, apparently, from what he said, because of what he calls internal squabbling. So he doesn't even see these guys as political grown-ups himself. So the whole
Well, that's because they don't anoint him as their leader. See, if the Green Party would all hail Ralph Nader and insist that he is the one and only and no one should ever run in Green Party politics except him and the candidates he endorses, I'm sure he'd love the Green Party. But we just don't have these kind of dictatorial parties except for the really, really small ones in America.
Well,
and so he just couldn't control it all, and that's why he got so upset.
And here's the word. Here's the where the word your word dictatorial is not so off base, because, of course, even before I asked my question, he had tried to set up what I call a rhetorical barrier to challenging his motives. It's really, we're talking about what his motives are here,
right.
because, you know, he's presenting himself as a constitutional purist. You know, I'm running because it's my right, not because it's the right thing to do. Because he can.
Oh, it's his right. No one's saying it's illegal for him to run. I mean,
exactly.
He has the right to run. It's just it doesn't help the causes that he claims to care about. That's
okay,
the point.
And so on top of it, if you try to question his motives and the impact it could have on those causes, he has come up with a new little term. You know the way the Republicans came up with judicial activism to try to squelch special rights, you know,
rights
for people
right.
that they don't like? Well, with Ralph, in order to squelch dissent or questioning of his motives, he's come up with this rhetorical barrier, which is called political bigotry. He tells these Greens, now anybody who asks you why I'm running and tries to pull that on you, you just shut them down right away by accusing them of being a political bigot. Okay, well, I wasn't going to take that, so I tried to question. Anyway, got shot down, whatever. Never got the question answered. He reverted back to political bigotry. But the funny thing was, this pathetic little aside was that this was ostensibly some kind of fundraiser. He was actually doing a book signing. But
uh-huh.
he tried to auction off. He actually succeeded in auctioning off a pen, okay?
A pen, like a writing pen.
A writing utensil. And this thing was
like a $1 Bic thing or less than a dollar.
Well, no, it was it apparently had some special meaning. First of all, of course, that he had used it to sign things. And it was apparently...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right.
That, you know, hey, I mean, I have a pen right here. I've chewed on it a little bit, but if any Horn listeners want to buy my pen, heck, how much did Ralph Nader charge?
Okay, well, listen, this is interesting. Now, just
okay.
check this out, because he was also doing a little bit of huckstering here.
Uh-huh.
The pen was apparently manufactured somewhere exotic, like Eastern Europe, like somewhere like Bavaria or Austria or something. Okay, so it was one of those like highfalutin kind of Germano, Austria,
okay.
whatever pen. Okay,
right.
So he managed to get some poor person there to commit to spending $300 to donate this money to the Green Party, I guess, for this pen. Now, he implied, though, that there was just only this pen, you know, it was his, like, and then it turns out that in order to get everybody else who had been underneath this person, $300 person, he said, he basically cajoled them, he said, oh, by the way, there's some other pens kind of like it. Wouldn't
okay,
you
okay, wait,
like,
so, Let me get this straight. So he says to the first person, this is a special pen. It's from Hungary. I've used it. I've signed things.
Right.
He wants $300 for it. Some
right.
guy says, okay, I'll give you $300 for it. And then he says,
right.
oh, but there are other special pens.
Right. And then he basically shames these poor, you know, gray and greens, okay, to cough up their $150 to $250 for these other secondary pens that are probably exactly the same pen, it turns out. Not so special. It was so tacky. I don't know how else to put it. It was tacky. And of course I never got the question answered about what his real motives were. So that's my little Ralph Nader story, and it is, you know, as somebody who considers herself a progressive, as somebody who greatly respects the work he's done as a consumer advocate, I do not see any other purpose for this campaign than some kind of quixotic sort of self-promotional. It's like he's a quixotic Pied Piper trying to lead the vestiges of the left over some delusional cliff. I don't get it.
I think he's a megalomaniac and an anarchist. I mean, it's interesting. I was reading what he says why he's running, and he says if the Democrats can't win this election in a landslide, they should cease to exist as a party. What's his goal?
What's his goal?
What he's saying in effect is I'm going to make it harder for Democrats to win because they should win. So in other words, I support their policy so much that I'm going to make them wear a handicap. I'm actually going to, you know, it's like Tiger Woods is so good that because I support Tiger Woods, we'll just add 10 strokes and we'll make it tough for him. It's a game.
Well,
it's a game to him.
There's two things. There's two things that I hear in that. What I hear, this is the bad part of idealism. This is the underside. You know, people think idealism is a good word, is a good thing. No, it's actually very dangerous. I mean, Hitler was an idealist. Castro was an idealist. You know, George W. Bush is an idealist. People that are committed.
I don't think George W. Bush is an idealist.
Fine.
I think
he's someone who just does what
Rove and Cheney tell him to do.
That's fine. But he's at least presenting himself as an idealist. So the whole thing is you present yourself as being so committed to some grand vision that it's all or nothing. That's the problem. And I'm actually going to try to post my footage of this little pen auction on YouTube.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. And in fact, once you post it up, let me know, and you can put a link to it on my website so that people can see that. No, I think it is pathetic. I want to thank you for your call,
Anne.
I do appreciate it.
Thanks for getting the word out. Bye.
Sure. You know, as I'm reading here about what Ralph Nader says, that this let me just read to you the direct quote here. He says that if the Democrats don't win this year, they should wrap up and close down and emerge in a different form if they can't get a landslide. Well, you know, what's he doing? He's taking people who would otherwise vote for the Democrats and taking away their votes. Is he convincing a single Republican to vote for him with that kind of stuff? It doesn't make any sense. Look, I have often condemned Democrats when I think they've gone too far. Those of you that read the Daily Coast know I've had a long-running battle with Senator Webb, the very Democrat who made the difference in giving us control of the Senate. We need his vote. I'm not trying to get him out of office. I am, though, trying to shame him to do the right thing, and I'll continue to work on that. But Ralph Nader is just helping the Republicans. That's all he's doing. And I was looking through. I don't have the amount of money he's earned this year. I don't have that because he just announced and he hasn't filed anything yet. But I do have records from 4 years ago in 2004. And it seems that 1 in 10 of his major donations, those of more than $1,000, are people who have contributed a large amount of money to the Bush campaign. I mean, there's just lists one after the other. Houston businessman Nijad Faris gave $200,000 to President Bush and gave the maximum amount to Ralph Nader. The former ambassador to Ireland, who raised more than $300,000 for Bush. Now think about this. Our ambassador to Ireland. Is there any greater Republican hack than an ambassador? You only get that job these days because you give a lot of money. He gave the maximum to Ralph Nader's campaign. Michigan developers, frozen food magnates, all of them giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Republicans and giving the maximum they can to Ralph Nader. Now, Ralph Nader, who claims not to support corporations, who claims not to support big money, who's busy, as Ann noted, hawking pens from aging hippies, he's taken this money from all these massive corporations, from all these CEOs. It's just fascinating to me because, you know, I know there are people that attack Hillary Clinton for the corporate donations that she's given, that she's taken. And we can argue about that. But Ralph Nader is supposed to be even purer than she, right? He's supposed to be even you're supposed to vote for him if you're, I don't know, if you think she's too far to the right, if you think Barack Obama is too far to the right. And yet, in 2004, he earned more than $275,000 from Republicans. That's a massive amount of money, and I think it shows you why, you know, heck, if I'm going to support anyone, we should support right-wing candidates. But, I'm sorry to attack progressives here. Maybe right-wingers aren't that stupid. Maybe they're not so stupid. I mean, James Dobson, I wish he were stupider. I wish he would run. More stupid, not stupider. I guess it's stupid to say stupider. But he should run. Go, James Dobson. Go far right. Go, David Duke. Run for office, by all means. That would be good. But unfortunately, David Duke is not running. I wish he would. No, we have Ralph Nader, which in some ways, I don't know, makes the whole thing worse. I would never shake that man's hand. I don't know. Maybe you don't feel the loathing the way I do. Maybe not. If you don't, hey, call in. Let me know. Let me know what you think. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366, or write on the blog. When we come back, if there are no calls, we'll go on with other topics. We'll discuss the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in Washington, the article on McCain. But anything you want to discuss, Kosovo, Gaza, there's a lot going on in the world. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I don't know why there's such a hullabaloo about Ralph Nader's announcement that he's running for president again. I know a lot of people hold grudges against Nader for Gore's defeat back in 2000, and I'm not going to deny that he played some role, but so too did Gore himself. Anyway, let's turn the page, as Obama says, and what's happening this year is that it's really unlikely that Nader's going to make any impact on the outcome of the race whatsoever. In 2000, he got 2.7% of the vote. In 2004, he got one-tenth of that. And I doubt he'll even hit that low watermark this time around. He's likely to be an asterisk of an asterisk of an asterisk. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have a right to run. And it doesn't mean he can't possibly do some good by running. One function he could play is to point out how undemocratic our two-party system is, how rigged it is against third-party or independent challengers. Another even more important function is to raise issues that no other candidate is raising, and he started to do that already. It's not a bad thing to note that Obama doesn't represent the left pole in American politics, or to call Obama on his support for a bloated Pentagon budget, or his reluctance to lead on the issue of Israel and Palestine. I don't think it's going to cost Obama any votes, and it may just clarify the distance he still has to travel. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy. Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Well, Matt Rothschild, I disagree with you. I mean, I agree that he will be an asterisk of an asterisk of an asterisk. After today, I will do my best never to talk about him again, because I don't want to give him any publicity, because I do think he's harmful to the entire process. If he wants to help third parties, Matt Rothschild, I've told you what he can do. He can go state to state. He can lobby state legislators to do what Louisiana has already done, to support runoff voting, to support proportional voting. There are things you can do to help third parties, if that's your goal. I don't think that's Ralph Nader's goal. I think Ralph Nader, as I said, is a megalomaniac, and I think he's an anarchist. I think he loves seeing his name in print, and I also think he kind of wants to see our whole system fail. He said in 2000 that he was kind of glad Bush won, because he knew Bush would ruin the nation so much that we'd have a revolution and start all over again. Well, that kind of thinking may be Leninist, but it's no reason to support Ralph Nader. Juanita from Florida, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, I'm really giving it to Ralph Nader. If you support him, that's well, okay. I can take it. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I'm wondering if Ralph Nader, John McCain, and Lieberman, have been given some kind of kickaboo juice by the Republicans, because they all seem to have changed so much, especially Ralph Nader. He doesn't seem like he used to be. He used to be somebody I admired.
Well, no, that's the point. That's the point I was trying to make at the beginning, that somehow it hurts more to have a friend become an enemy than have someone that's been an enemy all along.
Yeah.
There's something about Ralph Nader that gets under my skin even more than Dick Cheney. And I, you know, I never liked Dick Cheney, all right? I mean, Dick Cheney's pure evil. I get that. He's evil incarnate. Yeah. But there's something, like I said, it's something about betrayal. Something about that that just hurts more.
Given those people, I mean.
Well, let's talk about each one of them. With Joe Lieberman, I think it was the Iraq War. I mean, you know, he was always sort of on the margins of the Democrats. Even when Al Gore picked him, he was seen as one of the more conservative Democrats. But on domestic policy, actually, if you look at Lieberman's votes on domestic policy, they're not that different from most of the Democrats. I mean, you know, he's fine on most domestic issues. He's not great. Don't get me wrong. He's no leader. He's no Russ Feingold, but he's not terrible.
It's both him and McCain.
He drunk the Kool-Aid.
Look on their face.
Well, he drunk the Kool-Aid. I think what happened with Joe Lieberman, I'll tell you exactly what happened with him. He does support the war in Iraq. He's always supported the war in Iraq. He acts like a Republican on that. And so he refuses to see the bad news and only sees the good news. I understand that. There are Republicans that do that. You know, my friend Mike Lane does that. I get that. But what really happened with Lieberman is when he was challenged in Connecticut in the Democratic Party, and he lost in the primary.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that made him angry. It's one of those things I've said. I have a video where I gave a speech on impeachment on my website. It's only 8 minutes. I urge everyone to go to RadioInsideScoop.com and click on it, and I talk about the long list of lawlessness. But I conclude that video after giving detail after detail of why Bush and Cheney should be impeached, saying that history has long taught us that if you can't kill the king, it's risky to try, because it makes him mad, it makes him lash out. What happened with Lieberman, in my view, is that we tried to kill him, and we didn't succeed. Now, I support the effort to beat him in the primary, and I hope that they do it again, and we can get rid of Lieberman. But I mean, I support that effort. But understand that any time you anger someone in power, there are consequences. And I think that when the Democrats rose up justifiably against Joe Lieberman, he got so angry that he's been increasingly deserting the party. Now, John McCain, it's interesting. We have three very different men with three very different motivations. I think Ralph Nader's motivation, as I said, it's megalomania. He wants to see his name in lights. He used to have his name all up there back in the 60s and 70s when he was a real hero of the progressive movement. He knew if he ran in the Democratic Party race, he would lose big time. And so he ran as an independent because he wants to see his name in lights. Joe Lieberman, I've explained his reasoning. John McCain is another example. Where he's betrayed his principles. His, I think, is a more classic example where he's running for the nomination, and so he throws away his principles to get the nomination. This is something that Richard Nixon did. It's something that actually a lot of candidates do. It's still a flip-flop. It's still a betrayal. I mean, John McCain used to believe in fiscal discipline. He didn't support the Bush tax cuts. Now he does. He used to call Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson agents of intolerance. Now he cozies up to the religious right. He used to support an immigration bill that gave a path to legalization for immigrants that came here that are undocumented. Now he's backed off that one too. So he's definitely flip-flopped. I just think his is much more, I guess, a conventional reason. I think that Nader and Lieberman did it almost for psychological reasons. You know what I mean? To make themselves feel better. Whereas McCain, I think, is doing it for crafty political reasons.
Well, if they drank the Kool-Aid, it's like medicine. It affects people differently. So, you know, it went to wherever the evil side was, I think.
No, but see, Nader.
Let
me ask you this, Juanita, because it may just be me, and if it is, fine. I mean, some people just like Matt Rothschild came on, and, you know, in the break and said, you know, he's an asterisk. Don't worry about him. He doesn't apparently get under Matt Rothschild's skin.
I don't agree with that guy half the time.
He gets under my skin, though. He gets under my skin because George Bush is still harming us. He's still got 11 months to harm us. Ralph Nader's not the only reason George Bush is president. But if it were not for Ralph Nader, Al Gore would be president. Let's just be very, very clear. Yes, if it were not for other things, Gore's weak campaign or you know, the Supreme Court, all those things, that's also true. But it's also a fact that if Ralph Nader had not run for president, we would have had 7 years going on eight of peace and prosperity. We would not be fighting stupid wars in Iraq. We'd be fighting intelligent wars against the people that attacked us. Maybe even Gore would have prevented September 11th, because Gore is very much someone who thinks ahead of the game.
Totally different,
by the way, a year ago I endorsed Gore. Obama was my dream ticket. I still have this a year ago that was my dream ticket, Gore for president and Obama for vice president. It's still in the back of my head, and I know it's not going to happen, but something in me dreams.
He's my choice, too.
Yeah, well, something in me dreams that Obama could ask Gore to be vice president again. Now, I don't think he'd ever take it, but, you know, he's still my, if I can't get him for president, I'll have him as vice president again. I mean, I think he
should have some kind of prominent position. I think there's a lot of them that should, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he'd even take it. But he's really an extraordinary person, and I just, to think that he could have been our president, just think where our country would be. It hurts.
It does hurt, and you know I'm from Florida, so it really hurt me.
Wow, you're from Florida? Did you have the butterfly ballot? Where'd you vote?
Well,
in Florida.
I didn't, but I was watched all of that stuff back then. That's when you could watch everything that was going on. There's too much now to watch everything. But,
what county are you from in Florida?
I'm in Polk County. But
Polk?
I think we're pretty good. We mark our ballots. You know?
Oh, okay. So you have a paper record then.
But I watched the NAACP when they had the different people that told about what had happened to them when they went to try to vote.
Yeah.
Some of the places were torn down, and some of them had no parking places. There was just all kind of things. And it wasn't just black people. It was all kind of people.
Yeah, I know.
And then I watched all the civil rights hearings on that. And it wasn't just that butterfly ballot. It was so many other things. There was just a number of things.
There were, and of course, in 2004, it happened in Ohio too. They had fewer voting machines in black neighborhoods.
Well, and I just think that if they hadn't taken over, I think that they would have tried to destroy Al Gore if he had gotten in. So I don't know.
Well, of course they would have. They're going to try to destroy any of us. Juanita, I want you to make me a promise, and I want everyone who listens to this broadcast to make a promise in their heart. I don't want anyone to ever forget 2000. I know
2000?
People talk about Pearl, the election of 2000, the selection of 2000. I mean, people talk about Pearl Harbor Day, 1941. Mm-hmm. They talk about November 22nd, 1963, when Kennedy was shot. All of us remember where we were on September 11th, 2001. I hope that we all remember where we were on December 12, 2000, the day the United States Supreme Court.
I definitely remember it, no doubt about it.
Declared a coup d'etat and took over.
I watched all those little trials that there were had and the O.J. like of taking up the ballots up to Tallahassee. And you know,
Juanita, I watched every moment of it. And I was a lawyer in Los Angeles, and that one event changed my life. I left it all. I left a very high-paying job, as it happens, and moved to Washington to try to make it, to try to save my country, like Don Quixote attacking windmills. But that event changed my life.
That's why
I don't want anyone to forget December 12, 2000.
Right.
Because that is the day when democracy turned on its head.
I wish that they would show those hearings again. You know, I think a lot of people...
They should. They should.
Yes,
people should remember. The other thing that people never seem to remember is, I guess because it happened so much, so quickly after September 11th, but people don't seem to remember that the Al Gore won Florida.
Yeah.
That he got more votes than George Bush, even with the butterfly ballots. Take away those 10,000 votes of Holocaust survivors voting for someone who supports Nazis, Pat Buchanan. And even Pat Buchanan admits they weren't his votes,
and good
for Pat. But
terrible.
But people don't even remember.
It was awful.
If you look it up, and the press is partly to blame on this. The press had an article where the headline was Bush won, win Florida under some circumstances, and Gore wins under other circumstances. And then if you read the text of the article, not the headline, what the article says is if you don't count all the votes, if you don't count them all, there are some scenarios in which Bush wins. But if you count every vote cast legally in Florida, then it doesn't matter whether you count a chat or you don't count a chat or you count a pinprick or you don't. Under any system of counting, three corners, two corners, one corner, any system of counting, as long as you count every vote in Florida, Gore wins. And that story, which came out, you know, right after September 11th.
Destroy all those.
Well, people don't ever know this. It's you know, even Matt Drudge admitted it. You can go Google today, Matt Drudge, and he says Gore wins under any system of counting when you count all the votes. You talk to people today, and they say, well, Gore won under some and Bush won under some. Yeah, Bush won under some. Well, you don't count all the votes. What democracy is there that can justify not counting all the votes? We should all remember that day.
Did you know about the lawsuit that the NAACP brought against what's their face, the Secretary of State, and
against Catherine Harris. Harris.
And about them bringing a lawsuit against them and settled out of court about their voting rights being denied them.
You know, the problem with a lot of settlements. Yeah, I did. The problem with a lot of settlements out of court is usually they have confidentiality clauses, which help the plaintiffs, but don't help all of us in knowing what's really going on. You know, the other thing about Catherine Harris is that her seat in Congress, when she ran for Senate, her seat in Congress, that very district, the Democrat, got more votes, except in the precinct where she was heavily supported. Suddenly, the undervote was down like 20% on electronic record. It was exactly what Clint Curtis the programmer described what happened. He said that this is how you manipulate votes. What you do is you don't just add votes to one place because that looks suspicious. If you have an area that's mostly Democratic and you have all these Republican votes, that looks suspicious. If you have an area that's, you know, 80% Republican and they get 95% Republican, that looks suspicious. What Clint Curtis described is here's how you manipulate an electronic vote count. All you do is you depress the turnout in heavily Democratic areas and you increase the turnout in heavily Republican areas. So if you have this area of her district that is very Republican, 80% are voting Republican. If you increase the turnout from 40% to 70%, the percentage in that district remains the same, 80% Republican, but it helps her win. And the same is true if you lower the turnout. You take, you know, 70% vote in the Democratic district and you lower it to 20%. And again, without affecting how each of the counties voted, you can change an election. That exact thing happened in 2006, in Catherine Harris's old district in Florida, and no one could prove a thing because we have electronic voting machines. So this is exactly the kind of fraud that – I've said it myself, by the way. I think that we should have – I mean, I joke and I say death penalty, but I don't know how far I'm joking. Life imprisonment works for me. I mean, if you intentionally, and it can be proved beyond a reasonable doubt and before a jury, that you intentionally swung an election, at least life imprisonment. And it wouldn't bother me if it were the death penalty. That kind of person is as harmful to America as Al-Qaeda, in some ways more harmful. Yeah. More harmful.
And, you know, they've just gotten away with so much different things.
They really have, and partly
can
it's because
I ask you a question?
To talk about it.
If
go ahead.
I send you something for the email, will you check it out for me? I've sent for other people and I've got no response.
All right, I'll take a look at it.
Okay,
depends how complex it is. I don't want to promise to do a whole legal thing. Just go ahead and send it to me. Send anything to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com, and I'll check it out. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Juanita. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Well, I spent most of the hour going over some old battles. Many of you know I never get as passionate as I do when I'm talking about the 2000 election. It's interesting. For a lot of people, their passion is the war in Iraq, and I understand that. I mean, 4,000 Americans dead, tens of thousands wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead, millions who have left the country, $1 trillion in debt. It's very easy to get upset over the war in Iraq. But somehow that doesn't bother me as much as the election of 2000. And maybe that explains my intense loathing for Ralph Nader. Because Iraq was a policy choice. It was a terrible policy choice. It was a stupid thing to do. It harmed American security. It harmed our economy. And yes, it helped enrich some oil companies. It did all of that. But it wasn't a fundamental threat to our democracy like the selection of 2000 was. In the selection of 2000, you had one candidate win and another candidate take over. And that to me is just so blunt and so flagrant and so obvious a direct threat to our democracy that I don't know how many wars, it just doesn't hurt as much. And maybe that's why Ralph Nader bothers me so much. I would prefer, as Jersey points out in the chat room, I would prefer you not vote at all than to vote for Ralph Nader. Does it give any encouragement to this man who takes money from corporations, takes money from Republicans, and then argues that Republicans and corporations are evil? And it's not like he has a chance, right? I mean, I don't know. If a Republican wants to give money to Barack Obama, he probably wouldn't take it, but I wouldn't mind so much because then you can see how he's using that money to overthrow the Republicans that are running the country. But to give it to Ralph Nader, whose votes take away from Democrats, just drives me crazy. So, as I said, I sort of went afield today. There were some other things I wanted to discuss, and we may have to get to them on another broadcast. Tonight, I'm going to debate Mike Lane. I'm going to play for that tomorrow, right here on the horn. It's interesting. He, I'm sure, will go and condemn the New York Times and defend John McCain. And I guess my view on it is this. Whether or not John McCain had an inappropriate sexual relationship with a woman that's not his wife, it's really not my business. I mean, it would be inconsistent of me to say it's my business when I don't think that Bill Clinton's dalliances with Monica Lewinsky were our business. You know, as long as she's not, I don't know, a spy, then it's not relevant. That's between him and his wife. But what is relevant is if he's giving favors to a lobbyist. Whether he sleeps with her or not, it is relevant when someone who gives money to his campaign is getting special treatment. Just like it was certainly relevant when Bill Clinton pardoned Mark Rich. He never should have done that. And it appears now that John McCain is lying about it. He is saying that he didn't help her, convince a regulator to allow media companies to consolidate when he did. He simply did. And that's the thing we need to be upset about. That's the thing we should be concerned about. The sexual relationship, to me, is, you know, that's good for the tabloids. It's good for the late-night comedians. But the important thing is how it is that he is in the pocket of these lobbyists. That John McCain, who claims that he's about reform, really isn't. And frankly, to discuss that, we don't have to go to Vicky Eisman. We should go to Charles Keating. That's a lot clearer. I mean, go for it, New York Times. If you want to investigate Vicky Eisman, I'm not telling you not to. But we know about Charles Keating. Charles Keating is the reason why John McCain's in government. Charles Keating financed everything he did. And John McCain, when push came to shove, tried to get regulators not to monitor Charles Keating and his banks. And the savings and loans crisis cost the American taxpayer hundreds of billions of dollars, all thrown away because John McCain was paid off. Now, he wasn't the only one. There were other politicians that were paid off. There will always be politicians that are paid off. But don't think that John McCain is anything different. And when Ralph Nader gets on his high horse and condemns these things, and properly condemns these things, don't think he's doing it for anyone but himself. There are all kinds of ways that Ralph Nader could help in the political process. He could sue these corporations under the Freedom of Information Act to find the ties between the government and these corporations. Let's find out who was on Cheney's Energy Committee. Ralph Nader, you're a lawyer. You could do that. As I said, he could go into states. He could go into state legislators and convince them to allow third parties to have a say. You do that through proportional voting. You do that through runoff voting. You do that through second choice voting. There are ways to do that. You have to get on the ground. You have to organize. And if he did that, I would support him in that. He could work on consumer safety again. He could work on green projects to get us off of foreign oil. And if he wants to run for president, he should do what Dennis Kucinich or anyone else did. Heck, even Mike Gravel. And I think Mike Gravel is whacked, okay? I think the man's crazy. But even Mike Gravel ran in the Democratic primary. In fact, I think he's still running. He's still in the race, folks. I don't think he's going to win. But at least he ran in our two-party system the way it works to try to change it. If you don't like the two-party system, change the two-party system. But if you don't work to change the two-party system, and Ralph Nader's done nothing to change the two-party system, if you don't work to change the system, you have to work within it. And the only way to work within it is to run in the Democratic primary. This is Mark Levine signing off.